Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge with a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, named after my sister, Marcia Joyce. And that was Trinity House Entertainment.inc, Rachel and Michael. And Rachel and Michael, I can't wait to see you guys this weekend. And they created the music for the song, and we are going to have a beautiful day because the sun is shining, yay! And the weather is just beautiful outside, and we have one of the greatest meteorologists on today. We have Brian Busry, who wrote The Wonderful World of Weather. So, you're going to bring me some more great weather today? How are you?
If I had the power, hey, Fran, how are you this morning? If I had the power, I would definitely grant you whatever sort of weather you would like.
Definitely not 100 degrees.
But I tell people... Yeah, I get that. I tell people I'm in marketing, not production. I don't make it. I just tell you about it.
I know. But, you know, it's funny because I watch the weather on the Weather Channel. They get so excited that I get excited about the weather. And I had a friend that was a meteorologist that I taught in my school for a long time. And then he became a weatherman on a radio show. And the kids loved going to the weather center. So it was fun. So I got into weather. But the problem is that when it's 100 degrees outside, I don't like the weather. No. Or last night it was horrible. There was storms. I don't know who is angry.
No.
So this book,
you know,
said
for
is based on a... Go on.
I was just going to say, for me, you know, I guess because I'm from Cleveland, Ohio originally, I'm probably more tolerant of cold weather than hot weather.
Yeah.
Because my philosophy is, you can always have a heavier coat or sweater. In the summertime, you can only take off so much legally and still not be comfortable.
Well, I agree. I agree with you. I do better when it's like 60 degrees or 50, and then my husband yells at me because I don't put on a coat. My dad never wore a jacket either. And I said, like, oh, it's 45 degrees outside. I don't need a jacket, and pray to God I don't get sick. But I don't. But it's like 100 degrees outside, and it's no fun. I prefer, and then snow, forget about it. I don't do snow. But in my neighborhood where I live, and it's cold up here, they do plow the snow so it goes away, which is really nice of them. Yeah, they don't, you know, otherwise the people around here scream, what's going on? And in my parking lot, they make it disappear, which is even better. So this is based on a real story. I read this book, and first of all, everybody, you have to read this. The pictures are fantastic, and what really I love is that the font is large, and I don't need a magnifying glass to see it. And I've been getting a lot of books lately. I just got two books today, and I'm going like, you expect me to read that? I can't even see it. Well, it's regular. So as a childhood experience created the framework for your life. When you decided to fly your kite and saw the cloud, what was going through your mind? Me, I would crawl under and go in the closet because I don't like storms. Forget it.
But when I first came out, it was totally sunny. And so I was pretty much focused on flying the kite because the winds were starting to pick up a little bit. So I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be great. And then the thunderstorm rolled in pretty quick, and that's what scared me because it kind of derailed my plan of flying a kite. So what went through my mind was, man, things change quickly. But, you know, probably it didn't really happen that way in that probably the forecast was there. Probably on the news the night before, they said that there were probably going to be some thunderstorms. But when you're 8 years old and you have your heart set on flying a kite, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
Nothing else matters.
No, I know. I used to fly them until my dad let me. He wouldn't let me do sports because he said I wasn't made for sports. But it didn't matter because I could punch a ball and hit a bat and get a home run every time. So I didn't have to worry that I couldn't run. I just walked around the bases and skipped. It didn't matter.
Good for you.
So, You're good for me, as I told him. I said, you see, I may weigh two. I was huge. I'm 107 pounds. I was 200 pounds. And he said, how are you going to do it? I said, don't even worry about it. I'm going to clean the bases, and you guys are going to win. They just, whatever. So your mother told you to come inside about the storm created your fear. The thunder, I still don't like thunder and darkness and heavy rain. And like I said yesterday, there was a thunderstorm here, and I just sort of hid. I couldn't stand it. So Mom, she didn't cause the fear. What did you do when you told her to, when she told you to come inside and you heard the thunder?
Well, I was like, okay, she knows best. Mother knows best. So I went in as quickly as possible. So Mom, yeah, she didn't cause the fear, but she was just trying to get me away from it. And part of the problem is, as you know, thunder is so loud, and especially when you're outside. But even when I got inside the house, the windows still rattled because they were the old storm windows with a screen that you would put in as an inlay. But I was more scared just because it wasn't just one boom. It was several booms that kept going and getting louder as it got closer. And that was probably the first time I can remember thunderstorms that strong. It was the first time Cleveland had a tornado watch that I remember. And again, the story in the book is a compilation of two different events. One, me flying the kite. The second one really struck me was on July 4th of that same year. And we were under a tornado watch. And then I had to deal with thunder, lightning, heavy rain, and wind that was bending over the mature trees in front of my yard. So that's probably the one that really got me. And so although the beginning of the story talks about my kite and learning about thunder or first experiencing it, most of the story has to do with that 4th of July when the storms were much stronger.
But you know what brings it to light? First of all, I read the foreword, which I never do, but I did read it. And I did. I reviewed Al Roker's book. He just doesn't know it, but I did.
Okay.
His weight loss book. And the pictures, like, really, really, really bring this alive. I mean, you could see that you have the fear, the boom. I could hear the boom. And the clouds, and what I really thought was cool were the pictures of the clouds. They're so cool.
Yeah.
Because it's just like they tell a different story. So how did your fear get displaced? You said writing the only meteorologist you knew who understood the weather. Tell us about Dick Goddard and Cleveland. So he started to ask, and then you started to ask questions.
Yeah, because you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s. Local news was just about everything, as opposed to now we've got Netflix and Hulu and CNN and all the cable channels with news and the Weather Channel itself. So there weren't that many choices back then, so I didn't have many meteorologists to choose from. I mean, now you've got, 25 on the Weather Channel alone. But I was kind of scared and didn't know exactly what thunder was and what caused it. So I was able to write him a letter, and he was gracious enough to answer snail mail back in those days. You know, there's no email back then. He actually typed out a letter back to me, and I asked for an autographed picture, and he sent one to me. And then I called him up, and I asked him, I have some more questions, and he invited me down to the station. And that became a tradition, in that every year, if my grades were up from third grade, probably through about senior in high school, I would go down there once a year. And as I got older, he would start to show me more about the meteorology, like the maps and how to read those. But at first, it was more just general topics that an eight-year-old could understand about thunderstorms. So just listening to him was enough to calm me down. And then my science teacher, Mr. Paul Hink, which is kind of rare to have, first of all, a male teacher in elementary school back in the 60s and 70s, let alone a teacher who was strictly for science, where, you know, you had a music teacher, you had an art teacher, but we had a science teacher. So we'd go from the homeroom, our classroom, up to science about twice or three times a week. And he saw that I was interested in weather, so what I did was I was able to cut out the map from the newspaper, and he had a chalkboard United States map, and I was able to do a weather report in front of my peers, my class, at the end of science class. And so that's what probably got me interested in talking about weather, since, again, I had no idea of the military's use of meteorology or the private sector or farmers. So the only thing I knew is, okay, guys on TV talk about the weather. That's the only job. But in that classroom, I was able to talk about the weather to the kids and present a weather forecast. And, you know, at first, I think the kids thought it was kind of nerdy, but toward the second half of the semester, they said, can I be your assistant and help draw the weather map? So all of a sudden, it's like, geeks are cool. And that's been pretty much my mantra ever since, that, you know, being somewhat brainy and using your brain and even something as geeky as meteorology is kind of fun.
Well, the kids in my class, because I taught every grade, and then I became the reading and writing staff developer and the dean. And they used to love going to the weather station. But the most fun was when Steve gave each one of them a weather map to take home so they could analyze it and see if they could tell what the weather was, and then they sent it back to him to see if they were right. And
that's cool.
That was fun. But my science teacher, unfortunately, in junior high school, spent 45 minutes washing his hand and 5 drying them and putting stuff about carburetors and stuff on the board and said, copy it. And long as you did it, it was really exciting, let me tell you. I didn't have great science teachers. Everybody else was great. But my science teachers, as a matter of fact, when I went to take my education classes for teaching, the science teacher was really good. He was the one that got this guy into weather, and he said, you know, we're going to teach you how to teach, you know, science. And I raised my hand and I said, this is going to sound weird. I said, can you just teach us the subject? Because I was never taught it in school. And he did. It was like he looked at me, and everybody else said, oh, thank God you said it, because I had a certain amount of background, but by the time I got done, I actually could teach science. So when you watch the rain come down, why is it soothing sometimes? And sometimes people, you know, my mother believed in fans back then. Thank God there's air conditioning. I don't think I'd survive. You open up the window, and you sort of like, I used to catch the raindrops because it was fun.
Right.
So how does rain make you feel, not in a storm, how does rain make you feel soothing? It sort of calms your nerves if you're in a bad mood and you need to de-stress.
You know, I think it's at least hits on 3 of the 5 senses, because, you know, you can always smell a good rain. You can always hear the pitter-patter. You can always feel the coolness. And I think that combination, at least those 3, and the sight of just seeing the raindrops come down, especially if you're looking up and they kind of hit your eyelid. So I think that if you want to talk about touch, you can touch the raindrop by putting your palm on the hand out there. I think it's just a combination of all 5 of the senses that just calms you down. And for me, more than anything, it is the smell. Just something about trying to go to sleep with the windows open and smelling the rain. And it just calms you down. But of course, if it's coming down in buckets and things are flooding, that's too much of a good thing. But as a rule, if it's a gentle rain and there's not much of a breeze, it's pretty relaxing. And that was the thing that Mr. Goddard, I'm sorry, the last thing I was going to say, that's what Mr. Goddard kind of told me.
That is exciting, because last week there was a big storm and I went out and I stood outside purposely to see if I would grow, and I didn't. Really not fair. I got soaking wet, and I said, everybody tells you water makes you grow, and I'm 5 feet tall, and I said, can I grow an inch? And it didn't help. I got soaked. Didn't matter.
Well, you tried. You tried.
I did try. I try so hard. What can I tell you? But my favorite thing is every morning I love to look at the clouds. I know it sounds weird, but lately the clouds are different colors. I don't know if anybody realizes that this morning I got up, and there was pink clouds and red ones and the ugly black ones that went away, and the gray ones and the white ones and the tan ones. And every time I see the pink ones, I say my sister's up there because she loved pink. Why are there so many different clouds in different shapes? Because I've always wondered that, but the pink ones are my favorite.
The shapes is because of the updrafts and downdrafts within the cloud kind of make it squishy or kind of moves it out. I mean, we've all been in an airplane, or most of us have been in an airplane, and we hit some turbulence. Turbulence is nothing more than wind in the vertical. And sometimes within a cloud, those winds in the vertical stretch the cloud to make different shapes. So depending on how much of an updraft or downdraft you have and how close they are to one another, that kind of governs the shape the cloud will make. Now, the color of the cloud is a little different because the color of the cloud depends on how thick they are for one and the sun angle for two. Because believe it or not, the sky actually does go through most of the colors of the rainbow. Think about early morning, you're pretty much like a deep blue.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we get closer to noon, it turns a lighter blue, if not all yellow, because of the sun. And then at sunset, it starts to look more orange and red. So depending on the angle of the sun, the color of the sky changes, and therefore the color of the clouds in the sky can change too, since they're made out of water droplets, and each one of those water droplets can reflect and bend the light itself.
All I know is that in the morning, sometimes I see the red ones, but a lot of times I see the pink ones. They're so pretty.
Uh-huh. They are.
Yeah, and I look up and I go, yeah,
you know,
you're here, you're there. They're beautiful.
Yep. There are three different categories of clouds.
Mm-hmm.
The stratus clouds are the lowest. That looks like the whole sky has a giant paintbrush and somebody just painted the whole sky gray. So there's not much texture, there's not much characteristic of it. It just looks uniform. The cumulus clouds are probably the most fun. Those are the ones that look like heaps of mashed potatoes or cauliflower, where they're big and billowy and white, but they take on the different shapes, and that's probably as a child. And that's one of the illustrations that Crystal did in the book, sitting on your back, looking up at the sky and saying, oh, there's a pony. Oh, there's a butterfly. Oh, there's a tarantula. Whatever. The shapes that take on, those cumulus clouds are the ones that take on shapes of either objects or animals or vehicles or whatever. And then the third category are the high clouds, the cirrus clouds. Those are the ones that look wispy. Those are the ones that you see through pretty easily, where the sun still shines through them. It's almost like if you were finger painting and you take your five fingers and just brush them across the piece of paper, you kind of see parallel lines of color.
Mm-hmm.
That's cirrus clouds. Almost looks like a horse's tail. And so those are the three types. And depending on whether it's low, medium, or high, that'll kind of dictate what you see in the sky. But usually the atmosphere is one of those weird things in that it saturates from the top down, which is why the clouds are thin before the rain. Then as the rain gets closer, the clouds thicken up and they get a little lower. And then when it's raining totally, that's when it looks like the whole sky is dark.
I know. Last night you should have seen. You couldn't even see outside. It was so dark that you, in order to see, literally, you would need a flashlight. That's how dark it was.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was. And last week too, it was. And then when I was outside in the rain, I go like, I could barely see, and I'm a little person. So.
Right.
But sometimes you just I'm not afraid of the rain or the thunder. It's when lightning comes, I go like, oh my God, no, that's scary. That's scary.
Mm-hmm. Actually, lightning is pretty high up there as far as fatalities or injuries annually on average. You know, because we have tornado warnings, people pretty much take cover. Hurricane warnings, people take cover. But with lightning, because it is so unpredictable and you don't know when it's going to happen and when it's going to strike and where it's going to strike, that makes it kind of tough. And here's an interesting fact about lightning. Lightning looks pretty wide on the horizon. But lightning's only about as wide as your finger.
Really?
I'll let that sink in for a while. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, here you go. If you see an old incandescent light bulb, like a Thomas Edison bulb, obviously the thing that actually does the glowing is this little thin piece of wire called the filament, right? But the glow it creates is pretty wide because when you turn on that light bulb, the aura or the glow it creates covers up a larger area than just that filament, which is glowing. Same thing with the channel of electricity. The lightning bolt itself is only about your finger or a ballpoint pen wide, but the glow or the aura it creates on the horizon makes it look a lot wider. So if somebody was actually struck by lightning, the wound would look like a bullet hole, an entry wound. So it's very small.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is why when I see a lightning, I'll look at the window, and I just went away. That's it. I can't take it. I'm a brave person, but lightning, no.
Yeah.
So
I get it.
Your grandmother was my favorite person in the whole universe. So how did your grandmother explain what was happening? Because if she would have been around, maybe I wouldn't have been as scared because she understood it.
I think she just she was from the Carolinas, rural South Carolina, and so I think back in those days you had to look at the clues of the clouds that we talked about and the clues of the wind speed and the wind direction to know what was going to happen on the farm. See, funny, farmers are very good at forecasting the weather, and they always like to joke with us meteorologists and saying, I'm more accurate than you. And they're probably right for their farm. You know, if they're looking straight ahead and looking around their land, they probably have a good indication of what's going to happen. Of course, if you're a meteorologist on television, you're just not forecasting for one backyard. You're not forecasting for just a few acres. You're usually forecasting for several counties. So if you put that farmer in that sort of situation, I bet you they're not going to be as accurate because they have a larger area to try to cover. So I think grandma just has an instinct, and if you do talk to farmers, they do know how to read the sky and read the clouds. And so she was just, I think, just dipping into her childhood maybe, in her previous experiences to say, okay, this is what it is, this is when it happens, this is how it happens, and it ends like anything else. So don't feel too bad. Kind of scary at first, but knowledge is power, and the more you can take some of the fear out of it by just explaining it, the better it is. And I think she knew that.
The other fun part of the book was, and everybody, don't try this unless you have an adult there and know what you're doing, is she taught you how to make a tornado. That alone would say, oh, my God, yeah. And what was that experience like to learn how to make a tornado?
A tornado in
that
a jar.
That must have been fun. Yeah, that must
it
have
was.
Been fun.
One but of the
know
courses we had
know.
To take in meteor. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's obviously nothing too harmful with regard to the ingredients. But the tornado in a jar is, it's basically water, a little vinegar, and a couple of drops of soap actually make the funnel appear in the water. And one of the classes that you have to take in meteorology is what's called fluid dynamics, because air and water behave the exact same way. We just can't see it. But the air does make waves. The air does make ripples. The air does swirl, much like when you see a wave hitting the shoreline. It doesn't come out in straight lines. It kind of swirls. Same thing. And some of the terminology we use in meteorology we can also use in talking about water. We talk about things like short waves and long waves. And so there are waves in the atmosphere. So this experiment of tornado in a jar basically replicates what the atmosphere is doing that we can't see. And so you pour water about three-quarters of the way up a like a peanut butter jar. You put in the water, you put in a little vinegar to keep the suds from getting too, so it doesn't look like a washing machine. And you put in a couple of drops of soap, and you swirl it around where you kind of keep the base of the jar kind of still in your left hand, but you kind of swirl wider or more wide the top of the jar to try to replicate a funnel. And after you stop, it does actually show up, and it does look like a tornado on the ground. Grandma didn't do through that. This was more what I added to her original, very simple explanation. But she would take me to the sink and look at the drain, how the water would go down the drain, and kind of say, see, that's a tornado. And I think all kids, when they first see it go down either the bathtub or the sink, kind of go, man, that's kind of cool. But it's the exact same structure.
Michael says to tell you hello. He's in the middle of moving his son, and he's going to listen afterwards. I just got a message from him. Otherwise, he would get a big time out. How can I tell you? So what made you wonder? I mean, I always wonder. I get up every morning, and I go like, is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? Is it going to be snow? Is it going to be rain? Is it going to hail? I hate the worst. That's even worse. So what made you wonder about different kinds of weather? And do you have a favorite kind? Because I have a favorite kind, sunny and 60 degrees and beautiful outside with no clouds.
Gotcha. I think like any other kid, you know, one of the favorite ways that a child can make a conversation lasts for an hour is one word. Mm-hmm. And the word is why.
Mm-hmm.
Why? And you can just keep saying and asking another question. Why? And I was just fascinated by thunderstorms. And I was fascinated how they formed and why mm-hmm. they lasted and why they were so long and why it took so long for them to die out. And
mm-hmm.
so I think I just started applying that same curiosity to, okay, what's a snowflake? Why do all snowflakes have six sides? Okay, hailstones. Boy, some are big, some are small. I hear that if you cut a hailstone in half, you can see exactly how many times it went up into the freezer part of the storm and came back down to fall out, only to go back up and down. It's like concentric rings on a tree. Basically, in a thunderstorm, you've got a cold part of the storm and a cool part of the storm. The cool part is below. It's almost like looking at a refrigerator freezer, where the freezer's on the top and the refrigerator's on the bottom. You put some water in the refrigerator, you put it up in the freezer, what happens? It freezes, turns into ice. Okay. That's pretty much the same thing when an updraft pushes a piece of rain up into the cloud, it turns it into a small piece of ice. Then that small piece of ice comes back into the refrigerator, it thaws out, grabs a little more water, goes back up into the freezer, it turns into a bigger piece of ice. So the stronger the updrafts are in the cloud, the more times that raindrop can make it up into the freezer, it makes itself larger into a hailstone. And when they can't keep those hailstones suspended anymore, that's when they fall to the ground. So if the thunderstorm is very strong and powerful, those hailstones can be as large as tennis balls.
Yeah,
the updraft
isn't
that strong. Oh, yeah, that would hurt. Especially because it's going to accelerate due to gravity, you know, because the Earth is going to pull it down.
Yeah.
And so it's going to speed up as it does. But, yeah, and I think I was just fascinated because just the not knowing, the uncertainty and the mystery of it all. I remember there was one fact I remember reading out of one of the books that was in one of my science, that was in the library that Mr. Hink took me down to, is that one mature thunderstorm weighs 400,000 tons.
Oh, God.
I'll let that sink in. One thunderstorm weighs about 400,000 tons, a mature thunderstorm. That's about the same weight as 55,000 elephants. Okay, now the question is, everybody asks is, okay, if it weighs 55,000 elephants, how does it stay floating? Well, each cloud droplet by itself is light enough to defy gravity. It's about the same consistency as a foggy morning. So a cloud, although you draw angels in the clouds in heaven, clouds are not solid. They're vapor. So each cloud droplet by itself is light enough to defy gravity. But if you had a sponge big enough to grab that whole cloud, you would have yourself 400,000 tons of moisture, which is kind of cool. And I just remember that fact sticking with me. And hearing the parallel of 55,000 elephants, and then, as I said, an 8-year-old asked, why? So how does it stay floating? Why? And I think that was just the beginning for me to really do a deep dive into it and try to figure out what makes this whole tick, and how can you anticipate those changes? Because they're going to happen. They're definitely going to happen.
It's so weird because you never know. I mean, sometimes weather. I notice on every single channel, because if I don't like the weather on one channel, I'll flip to the next one to see if I get a better forecast, and then I'll flip to the next one. And seriously.
Yeah.
And yeah, because you never know. And first I put on channel 12 because I like the guys on channel 12. Then I'll go to 4, maybe, and I don't get your channel because I'm in New York. And 5, I like Mike Woods. I like Chris Savino. Some of them really are good, and some of them like put me to sleep. Al Roker's pretty good, but he does the weather around the country. But I like the Weather Channel the best. But how come
the
forecasts are all different?
I can answer that. Two questions. First of all, is Janice Huff still up there? Good friend of mine. On 4 on WNBC, Janice Huff.
I love her.
Okay.
She's
great,
amazing.
Great
I watch
lady.
Her too. Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, and the other one I was going to mention, a friend of mine by the name of Nick Gregory. Is he still on Fox?
Oh, I love him too, Channel 5, but I haven't seen him on there.
I don't know if he's on vacation or not. Not to talk. Anyway, so why are there different
forecasts?
Is that the question?
How come I can watch Janis Huff, I can watch Nick Gregory, I can watch Chris Savino, I can watch Mike Woods, who I think is great. Then there's Puente's daughter, Audrey, and there's a whole bunch more. How come no two weather forecasts are the same? As a matter of fact, even on Channel 12, when you have different forecasts, the no two weather forecasts are the same. So if they upset me and tell me it's going to thunderstorm, I just, you know, go to the next channel, and hopefully they'll say something else. But they're all different. How come? Even the temperatures are different.
Real simple. If do you only trust the opinion of one doctor, but don't you want to get a second opinion of looking at a diagnosis?
Yes.
Well, the same weather. If we took a small kindergartner into a museum, an art museum, and we told them to interpret the squiggly lines of this Picasso painting, we'd probably get several different answers based on that particular painting. Same thing with meteorology. We're all looking at the same data, but it's all up to interpretation. And we all bring a little of ourselves and some of the techniques that we've learned and also the previous experience if we've been in the same area for a while. And so that's why there may be four or five different forecasts out there, because we're all approaching the same problem differently, and we're all looking at the same data differently. So yeah, that's part of the reason why there are so many different forecasts out there, because we all are individuals. And same reason, going back to that childhood curiosity, as the kids look up at a cloud, if we put four kids on their back and look at a cloud and ask them what they see, one may see a barn, one may see a snail, one may see a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, one may see a locomotive. But there's no necessarily right or wrong answer to that. It's all interpretation. And the other thing is, you have to understand or realize that certain stations may have a different geographical bias. In other words, WNBC may be putting it more on New York City, where WOR is more New Jersey. So it, I guess it also depends on their audience. Are they trying to talk more about Connecticut? Are they talking more about New York? Are they more concerned about Jersey? And that's another thing, because, you know, you can be right for one area that's getting rain, and you can go
you can be wrong.
Two miles in one direction. It's totally sunny, which brings up another question. People wonder, okay, so how can it be sunny and I still get hit by a raindrop? Okay? If you take a coin and take it in your hand and put it over, say, a hardwood floor, and I want you to move your hand from left to right as you drop that coin, and by the time the coin hits the ground, your hand is not over it anymore. So the cloud that released that raindrop has already left. But it took a while for that raindrop to fall a mile from the cloud to the ground to hit you in the face. So in that time, the sun has come back out, the cloud has left, but the raindrop is still lagging behind to make it to the earth.
That is so interesting. Seriously interesting. But you know, I got the weather up in Upper Westchester. And I text once in a while, I text my hairdresser in the Bronx. And I'll say, how is it down there? And he'll say, it's really great. I said, well, then I'm coming there, because it's not great up here. And it's like, you know, 15, 20 minutes away. Last night I texted my nephew, who's in Maryland, and I said, we're having storms here. What about you? He said, the sun is shining. It's beautiful. I said, that's not fair. I said, seriously, not fair. He said, it's not even raining. Whereas my nephew, who's in Boston, the other nephew said, it's raining here, but it's not storms. He said, are you okay? I said, as long as I hide, it's okay. Don't worry about it. So, the other thing that really helps, even for kids that can't read, are the illustrations. Where did she come up? Oh, by the way, last night I saw like a face and a whole person in one of the clouds. I could swear that he was waving at me. Who knows? Crystal Bowman created the fantastic illustrations. How did she come up with them? And you said you supplied family photos. These are fantastic, let me tell you.
She did a great job, and if you could go on Amazon, you know how, like on my book, you can click on our names, and that takes you to another portion of the Amazon website. And if you would click on her name in the book or on the page of this weather book, you can see she's done a lot of other illustrations. So she's a pro at this. She does a very good job. But yeah, I just supplied her with pictures of me at various stages when I was like 5 and I wanted to be an astronaut, and 8 when I thought I wanted to be a meteorologist, and even into junior high school where I matured a little bit by 7th and 8th grade, and pictures of mom and dad and grandma. And she took those and took a little, you know, creative license with them. But for the most part, she really captivated the spirit of mom, dad, grandma, and yours truly as a kid. So I don't know how she does it. That's just another God-given talent I think she has. She's able to add some whimsy. She's able to add some personality, which is not always easy, you know, in that the visual arts are just, to me, fascinating. When you look at some of the old masters that are able to take pastels or crayons or paint and make a landscape or a portrait, to me it's amazing. And Crystal is just very talented in that way too. And when I saw it, because I remember I was like a very impatient child saying, okay, when am I going to see the results? Because it took a while for her to come up with these. But I remember when I saw them, I was blown away. And the colors that she chose, too, the palettes that she chose, nice and colorful and bright.
Yeah.
And I think it just adds a little appeal of the book that I think the child wants to go to the next page because of the illustrations as well. Not just the story, but also the illustrations.
Well, I'm going to get the feedback from the two guys next door. Ashton is 7. And Gabe is like 4 or 5, and they read every night. They do. And they're going to love this. They're going to love this because they love me because I give them all my children's books, and they think I'm wonderful. Yeah, they will.
Yes, you are.
Because, you know, you said something before, and I taught for 36 years in a public school in the Bronx, and I taught a lot of different things, and I must have done a good job because my students are constantly tagging me, telling me they love what I write, and they tell me I was wonderful. I must have meant something.
Nice.
But the one question that I always loved was why or what or can we learn more and can I ask a question? And I don't think there are enough educators anymore that are able or even deal with the questions. I mean, my niece would say to me, I go to school and the teacher just said, just listen and don't ask why, or don't ask questions that, well, how are you supposed to learn? You know, that's the one thing. I still do it. If I don't know something I want to know it, I'm going to drive you crazy until I find out the answer, whether it's a reading question or a book question. And I've been accused of always getting what the book is about, and that's because when I got my reading master's, the professor taught me how to look past what the words are and figure out what the author's trying to say. And they don't do that today. Nobody wants to stop and say, okay, what do you want to know? Do you understand what I'm saying? What do you want to say? They don't. So my other question is, this is the hardest one for me. How do you know that a storm is coming? I mean, a lot of people say my arthritis is bothering me, my face hurts, or my legs are bothering me, or my sinuses hate me, or something. How do you know? People feel it. I ever so often I go, okay, my hand doesn't want me to write today because it's going to tell me I shouldn't do something because it's going to rain, but it doesn't stop me. So how do you know a storm is coming? And how do you know which kind?
So I stay home and
don't go out.
If we're talking without looking at maps, there's certain clues, and people are absolutely right when they say they feel or they sense that something is changing. Probably the biggest thing that we should be in tune with is pressure. Now, you know, that's one of the things that people don't understand when you look at a weather map. You have high pressure and low pressure, those H's and L's that we show, and they don't mean much to people. But if you can imagine you're the atmosphere, and the thing that measures the pressure put on the earth is the instrument called the barometer. So if you are the whole atmosphere, the barometer is like the bathroom scale. So when you push down on the bathroom scale, the needle goes up. That is high pressure. High pressure means sunshine. That means that all the air is pushing downward. And if all the air is pushing downward, clouds can't form. When you step off that scale, the atmosphere is not pushing down as much on the earth, and air is allowed to rise. So at the ground, you have lower pressure. And lower pressure means storms and a change. So when we are on TV and we say that the barometer is rising, what we're saying is that things are going to be pretty sunny, pretty dry, no real good chance of rain. But when we say the barometer is starting to fall or the barometric pressure is starting to fall, that means there's an approaching storm. And depending on how strong or how quickly or how low that pressure goes, that governs how strong that storm is going to be. But those are how we do it without looking at maps. It's just how you can feel. And the reason people can feel it, when you have high pressure, you know, for people who have migraines, that's pretty much the atmosphere mashing down on their head. Not a good thing. For people who have arthritis, say, I can feel it in my bones as a storm is coming. Uh-huh. That's usually because low pressure, because now instead of the atmosphere helping to keep all the joints in place, things can now kind of move around a little bit or float a little bit because now there's lower pressure being exerted on those. So, yeah, you're right. People can sense and be their own barometer and figure out whether this change is going to be good or bad for them, or if it's going to be rainy or stormy, or if it's going to be dry for them. Now, with those of us who are meteorologists looking, we'll look at the satellite. Satellite's probably the best thing we look at because it's 23,000 miles up in space. It takes a picture of the Earth every 5 minutes. And we can stitch those together and kind of show you exactly what we think is going to happen in the next few hours, next few days, depending on how the storm is moving across the country. If we're talking in the next few hours or so, that's when you use radar to see where it is raining. Radar doesn't see clouds. That's what the satellite's for. Radar only sees rain or snow or sleet or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then we just look at weather maps. You know, when they say the temperature is so-and-so at the airport, like the old George Carlin routine, but who lives at the airport? But we needed a way to look at the whole country's weather with it taking a snapshot. And so the best way to make sure that we get consistent temperatures is to install them the exact same way all across the country. And the easiest way to keep them undisturbed so that weather instruments can be mounted at 6 feet off the ground, over grass, in the shade, we put them at airports. And so that way we can see that the airport in Newark and JFK and LaGuardia and up at Logan all have the same installation so that we can say, okay, this is probably what's going to happen in New England. This is probably what's going to happen up in Boston or down toward Philadelphia or New York. It's just a way for us to look at the country on the even playing field. Because imagine if we put the thermometer in New York and in the middle of a field, but say in Pittsburgh they decide to put their thermometer on the rooftop of an asphalt office building right next to the of the air conditioner unit. Well, obviously that's going to impact the reading that the thermometer is going to give. So for meteorologists, we look at a lot of maps. Yeah, we still look at weather balloons. They're sent up about twice a day. We look at the data at various levels in the atmosphere. Here's another cool fact. If Earth were the size of an apple, by scale, the atmosphere would be as thick as its skin. I'll let that sink in for a while. So it looks like the sky goes for miles and miles and miles, and it does. It looks like it goes on for an eternity, but it doesn't. But by scale, it's pretty fragile. It's only about as thick as the skin of an apple by scale. And a lot can bubble up or change in those bottom 8 to 10 miles. That's the most critical part of the atmosphere we look at, is the last 8 to 10 miles closest to the ground. That's where most of the weather forms.
This is amazing. So I have a question, seriously.
Sure.
Do you ever get emails from kids or teachers to come to schools and talk about the weather? I know that, you know, Sometimes I know I'm reading what you wrote in your answer. I wish I could be wrong, but the truth is that you have to be accurate. But sometimes I want to write to the weatherman and go, I wish you would make a mistake. Sometimes they are wrong. Not everybody's right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think the people that get the most excited are the ones on the Weather Channel. And the ones I really feel bad for are the ones that are out there in the tornadoes and in the storms. Do you ever have to do that? That would scare the daylights out of me. I mean, I saw Stephanie Abrams and a few others, and I go, like, you're blowing away. Oh, my God.
Well, yeah. As a rule, I have done it before, but being the chief meteorologist, I'm in the studio when we have bad weather. So it's the others who are out there. It's a young man's sport. Now, by the same token, I know a lot of storm chasers. And,
yeah, I know.
I've gone out with – I'm sorry?
That sounds interesting. I know. There was a guy, Tim Barnes, that was a hurricane chaser. I don't know if he's still – Tom Barnes. I don't know if he's still alive, but he used to tag me all the time about talking about hurricane.
Okay.
And my niece is 11. My niece is 11, wants to be a storm chaser. That's her thing.
And the thing is, you know, there's really no job where you can actually make a living being a storm chaser. Because
oh, good, I'm going to tell her.
Storms aren't every, the storms aren't every day. And usually storm chasers are part of research projects. They get grants, and they try
mm-hmm.
to. There's a company here called Kansas City Storm Chasers that does tours.
Mm-hmm.
They also do instructional talks to kids. And they do like Kiwanis clubs and Rotary clubs and nursing homes to talk about safety and that sort of thing. And so I've gone out with them. One chaser's name is Tad, and I've been out with him to see how he does it. And it was kind of interesting because in my younger days, I would go out there myself. The adrenaline rush is there to trying to intercept a tornado, but you definitely have to know what you're doing. And unfortunately, recently, there are a lot of people who think that they have a weather app on their phone that shows a radar, and we get the tornado warnings across my phone. Therefore, I can go out and chase. And no, you should not. You should stay at home and leave it to the professionals like this company there. But no, to answer your question, yeah, I go to quite a few schools. Because for me, if it weren't for Dick Goddard answering my letter and being gracious enough to ask me to come down to take that fear and turn it into a passion, I want to pay it forward. And I've been blessed to mentor quite a few people across the country in quite a few markets. As a matter of fact, if you're talking New York, there's a gentleman by the name of John Elliott, who I think is on Channel 2 up there, WCBS.
Channel 2, right.
John's one of my proteges. And so it's kind of cool to be able to mentor these guys and gals all across the country. And every once in a while I get emails from people I didn't directly mentor who didn't do an internship with me but said, I grew up watching you and I decided to go into the military and I decided to become a meteorologist because of you. That's kind of cool. So Do I go to school? Yes, I do. Do I do them frequently? I try to, at least one or two a week. It just depends on what the weather's doing and what my schedule is like. But I do enjoy that because I think there could be a kid in second or third grade who's also afraid of thunderstorms because of thunder. And if their trusted weatherman comes to their classroom, first of all, obviously they're excited to see that guy that they see on TV in person. It's like, wow, he's taller. He's 1 foot. I don't think he's going to be that tall. So to go to a school and to quill and to...
That is fantastic. He just bumped out. I don't know what happened. He just logged out. I don't know. He's going to have to call back in. I don't know. He just bumped out. I don't know what happened just now. Oh, here he is. Hold on a minute. I don't know what happened. You logged out. Can you hear me now? Brian, I can hear you. Can you hear me? Oh, Lord, this is not good. Let me do this again. For some reason, he logged out. Can you hear me now? I can't hear you at all. I don't know what happened. The sound went. We're going to have to try calling in from it. Oh, there he is. Okay, I'm going to try it again. Can you hear me now?
I certainly can.
Yeah, I couldn't hear you before, and then you logged out. I don't know what happened.
I'm not sure.
I don't know either. I'm going to ask my niece when she gets back from her grandparents in Ohio. If she has questions, I'm going to ask her to ask you them, because she's really serious. She's really science-oriented, and she wants to be a storm chaser. I don't know why, but yeah. So
I can put her in touch with a couple of guys down here, too.
That would be great. You know, it would be really interesting. I mean, I know all the weather people that you mentioned. John Elliott, I like. Janice Huff, Nick Gregory, Mike Woods, of course you. And Channel 7, I don't watch Lee Goldberg so much. I did review his book when he wrote one. Seriously.
Okay.
And Al Roker. It would be really interesting to have all these people on the same show just to see what everybody has to say. So I would do something like that. That would be kind of
fun. You'd have to wear a referee
shirt. It'd be fun. I don't know if they would even answer me, but you never know, because that's just me. So where can children learn more about you and weather? And because weather, I love weather, especially like today when it's sunny outside and it's not 100 degrees out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 82 or something like that. It's not too bad. So where can everybody learn more about you and weather so that, you know, kids could write to you and they can ask their questions?
Okay, well, my television station is KMBC, which is Kilo, Mike, Bravo, Charlie, for those who know the phonetic alphabet, KMBC. And I think the website is kmbc.com. Down at the bottom of that website, it says Meet the News Team. And then you can click on our individual names. It takes you to our biography page. And then on that biography page, there is a link that says email Brian. And if you email me, I will answer. Yeah.
Well, I will tell her, because she's serious about this. I'm serious. And I want her to understand. I want her to understand what it entails. She's always been into chemistry and stuff. She's really smart, seriously.
Okay.
And she says I take care of my aunt, because she's pretty smart too, we hope.
Yeah.
But,
does she like math?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's funny. My nephew was in sixth grade. And I know how to do the math and stuff like that, but I texted her to Penelope, and I said, could you help me just to make sure that I did this right, because it's not the same as what I taught, but I figured it out. And she texted me back in 5 minutes. She's like, this is a piece of cake. I go, that's what I thought. Yeah, she's into math, and she does read a lot because her aunt makes sure that she has the stuff to read. Yeah, she's very, very smart. And math is it, I know. My other niece is also into math, but she wants to be a forensic criminologist. I had a 4.0. She's got a 3.296, and I said, Katie, that's fine. So,
well, put her in touch with Michael on that.
Yeah.
Our friend. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael. Yeah.
Yeah. In order to become a meteorologist,
she might want to be a meteorologist, and she's got that personality. She's not afraid to get up in front of a bunch of people and talk. That's my girl.
Right. And 3 semesters of calculus, by the time you get your meteorology degree, you're just a couple classes short of a math major. But also tell her there are other sort of branches of meteorology besides just on TV. So, yeah, I think research is one. I think the military is another. Obviously, now talking about energy sources, we're going to have to know how to harvest the wind and sun. So there are other branches besides just being on television. And especially if young minds want to solve problems and ask why when they're younger, they'll probably start asking why not when they're older. And those are the kind of things we need for sure. Young people think of how to still change.
That is fantastic, because kids today need more. And as an educator, and I see what's happening now, unfortunately, teachers are restricted to what they can teach. And the way I was allowed to be creative on anything I wanted. And I used to come in at 6:30 in the morning, seriously, and I had a group of kids that came in at 6:45, and they were my breakfast group. And my room was as small as my finger. And these children, one boy came over to me one day. He came from Jamaica, and he said, I'm 12 years old, and I can't read. What can you do about it? I said, have a seat. Give me 5 minutes. And in five minutes, he read 100 words. And I'm serious. He did. Good. And he looked at me, and he said, how did you do that? I said, I didn't do anything. I said, you decided you wanted to learn. I'm here to make sure it happens. And then, like, 30 more kids, they came in the morning. They didn't have to. It was their time.
Right.
But they wanted to learn. And there's not enough of that today. And I think that kids would love to learn about the weather, because weather is fascinating, because you never know. It's unpredictable, which is so great.
The other thing I think about weather, and I think I said this in the foreword, I think it's not by accident that total strangers on an elevator can talk about the weather, because and honestly, when it comes to local news, weather is probably the most important thing, the forecast.
Yeah,
because unless you're related to the professional athlete, whether the game wins or loses, that doesn't directly affect your household. Unless one of your relatives is serving his or her country in the Middle East, for example, that doesn't directly affect you. However, do I need to, if I park outside, get up early enough to scrape the ice off my windshield? Will I have to come up with an alternate route because of the snow? Do I have to pack an umbrella before I leave? Those are questions that do directly affect you. And so depending on who your weather person is, trusted source, that's probably what's going to also dictate which station you watch. But, yeah, weather is very important, and I think that people can strike up a conversation strictly knowing that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I agree with you, because yesterday I was walking from the elevator, and then one of my neighbors said to me, how is it outside? I said, you're dressed too warm. You're going to be so hot.
Uh-huh.
And he just looked at me and said, oh, okay, you're right. I said, as a matter of fact, we had valet service because we had some problems with Con Ed or something. And I would say to the girls, do you have water? Make sure you have water. Make sure you have a wet rag around your neck because it's too hot. And, you know, I mean, really, weather is really unpredictable, like I said. But before we close, where can everybody find out your website, and where can everybody learn more about your book that I love?
Well, right now the book is on Amazon only. So the Amazon.com is the best place to find the book. Brian Busby, that's Brian with a Y. The website for the TV station, as I said, is KMBC.com. And my Facebook fan page is Brian Busby KMBC. And that way you can follow, although it's going to be Kansas City weather, it's still, I do answer questions all over the place. So, yeah, feel free to look at me those three places, and I'll give you that information if you can put it on your site after the show.
I will. As a matter of fact, I'm going to put the show live in about 10 seconds because I just unprivated it. So I'm going to look on my thing. Yeah, I did. Hopefully my little phone here will be happy. And yeah. I'm just going to post. Yeah, it's right here. And I just posted it on Facebook and everywhere. And you know what the fun part is? I posted that I was on the air just now, and a whole bunch of people are sharing my post. This is what happens.
Already.
Yeah, I often wonder why I'm so popular, but I guess maybe
I don't realize it.
Yeah, I try. But all I know is that that I get books all the time, and I never know they're coming. So, like, why? And this one was like, Mike said to me, why don't you do this? I said, of course I will. This is like great.
And I appreciate it.
But I want to thank you so much. I'm going to send you the link in about a minute on my phone here. And hopefully everybody will listen. And I have to send Mike the link also. This has been fun. Are you going to write another book or anything about the weather?
Yeah.
For older kids?
Oh, definitely. I'm going to talk about some of the problems and challenges of forecasting the weather. It's a story I came up with when I go to the schools. And it's like, you know, this is the house that Jack built. These are the boards. These are the nails that go in the board. You know how you build a story like that Jack built.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to talk about how weather forecasting is difficult because it starts with invisible stuff I can't see. And it always ends with, but we're not done yet. And then I add another layer, but we're not done yet. Then I add another layer. So that's one of those books I'm going to write that talks about you're trying to forecast something you can't see in an atmosphere that moves in four dimensions over a sphere that spins, but we're not done yet. And I keep adding all those different variables. That's going to be one book. But a follow-up to this story, since I think it ends with me kind of drifting off to sleep saying, wait a minute, what's going on? I probably want to do the next book where I go down to the station for the first time and meet Dick Goddard.
Oh, nice.
Let me say something about Dick Goddard. Dick Goddard started on TV in Cleveland in 1961 and just retired 2 years ago. So he was on TV in Cleveland for 50-plus years. And he has definitely influenced a lot of folks like myself to go into meteorology. But to be at the TV station for more than 50 years is pretty incredible. So I would like
that
to
is, that
do
is incredible.
Little Brian. Yeah, I'd like to do Little Brian meeting Dick Goddard. And my other mentors, you know, I got to mention Al Roker, since I was a weather watcher for him when he was here in Cleveland when I was in high school. Spencer Christian, when he was on Good Morning America, was one of my mentors. And a gentleman by the name of Mike Smith, who was a meteorologist at a station in Wichita, got hired at a station in St. Louis when I was going undergrad at St. Louis University, and I was his weekend student meteorologist when he was the chief meteorologist there. So those guys really have influenced
me. That's exciting.
And one last person I really should give a nod to, and I hope I can do this in 15 seconds or so. You can Google this lady's name. Her name is June Bacon Bursey. June Bacon Bursey was the first African-American degreed meteorologist on TV in the country.
Wow, that's important. That's important.
In the 1960s.
Wow.
This is even before King got shot. She was on TV in 1966.
I remember.
In Buffalo, New York. And one of these societies is called the American Meteorological Society. And because of privacy rules and laws, you know, they don't share our private information. But I knew her name, and I've always known who she was. And I knew that she was an important person because I'm able to stand on her shoulders since she was the pioneer. So I called the headquarters of the American Meteorological Society in Boston and asked them, is there any way you can give her my contact information because I want to talk to her? And they did, and she called me, and we had a lovely 45-minute conversation. And Fran, the thing that surprised me the most is she said, oh, I've heard of you. She heard of me. And I'm like, what? You live in California. You've been retired from meteorology for decades, and you know me? That was humbling, to say the least. Yeah. So those are the folks who have molded me. Yes, I do plan on writing a couple more books. But I think, like I said, the next one's going to be the guy who started it all, Dick Goddard, who turned that fear into passion.
Well, before we close, you have to promise to send it to me so we could do another interview so I could read it, because
I
love weather.
My pleasure.
I want to thank you so much. Everybody, it's a beautiful day outside. Enjoy it before it starts to rain. And I truly hope the weather forecast is wrong for Saturday, that it's going to thunderstorm. They wouldn't dare do that to me, would they? Of course not. Brian, thank you so much. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
Thank you, friend.